From WYPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record.
Some of my favorite moments from my show are when people call in and directly interact with celebrities, and it's clearly unregulated, and you get to see, oh, there's a 16-year-old kid from Kansas who gets to call up tonight and ask Diddy for relationship advice.
That's comedian Chris Gethard describing his eponymous talk show, now entering its third season. Gethard joins us ahead of a visit to Baltimore to perform stand-up and tape his podcast, Beautiful Stories from Anonymous People. He talks about his struggle with mental illness, the duty he feels to share those stories with sympathy as well as humor, and the satisfaction he takes in making sure ordinary people get listened to.
I do feel like I've made an effort with my podcast in a political sense of I'm going to put people's first-person accounts of their lives on record.
It's On the Record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're On the Record. Comedian, actor, author. We're going to spend this half hour with someone you might call a jester of all trades. He hosts a variety show and a podcast. He's got a special on HBO titled Career Suicide. And he's on tour taping his podcast called Beautiful Stories from Anonymous People and performing stand-up. Chris Gethard began his comedy career as an improviser with New York's Upright Citizens Brigade, UCB. His variety show, The Chris Gethard Show, has grown from a live staging at UCB to a public access program on the Manhattan Neighborhood Network to a cable show now in its third season. He'll be in Baltimore this Sunday at the Auto Bar, and Chris Gethard joins us now from KQED in San Francisco. Welcome.
Thanks. Happy to be here.
You talk very honestly about your struggle with mental illness, and that's where I'd like to start with a clip from Career Suicide, your one-man show that began off-Broadway. Here's a bit from the show in an interview on Fresh Air last year.
I'm behind this truck. The truck puts on the blinker. The driver has decided he's going to turn left. And I don't even slow down. I swing out. I'm going to go around him on the right, and as I do so, he starts coming back into the right lane. It's very clear the driver has decided he's not going to make the turn, and it's also clear I am in his blind spot. He does not see me, and I have time to think to myself, you should hit the brakes. And then I think, no, don't, because this way it's just a car crash, and this way your parents don't have to go around town being the parents of the kid who killed himself. Because we don't judge people for dying in car crashes, but we do judge people when they die of suicide. It's one of the strangest things I think we've given ourselves permission to do as a culture. And honestly, I think it's really mostly a branding problem. No, I do. I really think suicide has a branding problem because it has a tagline. It has a catchphrase. And I bet a lot of us know it. It sucks. It's really condescending. I bet we've heard it. Suicide, the coward's way out. I bet a lot of us have heard that. What a tagline. Tagline's supposed to get you like pumped up, right? Like Nike, that's a good tagline. Just do it, you know? And I'm not saying that suicide should take that one at all. That's not what I'm saying. Really, none of the big ones apply here. Although, I mean, Burger King, have it your way, I guess.
When do you first remember feeling depressed?
Let's see. I mean, I knew by the time I got to high school, I really had the sense that something was deviating from the norm. I could sense that even a little further back than that. I remember sometimes where my emotions would get very out of control. But by the time I was a freshman in high school, it really would come and go in some pronounced ways where I knew something was up and kept that hidden. And college is when it really became sort of pronounced and omnipresent. But yeah, stretching back to middle school, I was like, uh-oh, we got something going on here.
And how long did it take you to look for help?
I didn't actually get help until I was 22 years old, so just kind of stuffing it down and dealing with it and kind of, you know, all the things that people tell you to do, like, you know, just stop being a baby and push through it and stop complaining. I
I tried to do those things that you know, people would say, and those didn't work. So when I was 22 years old, I finally got into treatment.
So it wasn't so much that you had thought about treatment and decided against it. It's that it just, no one was suggesting it, and you weren't suggesting it to yourself.
I knew in my gut that it was something I needed. I remember one time telling my mom, when I was in school, I remember telling my mom, I think something's really off, and I think I'm going to go see the therapist that the college has. And then I just didn't go. And, you know, being Irish Catholics from North Jersey, my mom also just never followed up. It was just sort of like, okay, if you need to go deal with it, go deal with it. And I'm not trying to talk bad about my mom. She's very sweet. But yeah, it was, I knew it was a thing that I needed to do, but I was resisting it, you know, for all the, I figured there's, you know, a lot of judgment that comes along with it, a lot of fear in doing it. And I was aware it was something I needed, but I was still just not going for it for years.
And during those years, you were developing as a funny guy, right? You were doing comedy.
Yeah, I started doing comedy in New York when I was 20. It was a solid 2 years before I ever saw a shrink. And that seems like backwards to me now when I think of it. But I was kind of using my creativity and my comedy as a way, I think, to try to solve some of my problems. But it quickly proved that was not a realistic thing and I needed some actual help.
Yeah, that's what I'd like to understand, is kind of where comedy lived in relation to this thing that you knew wasn't right in you. I mean, did you feel you needed to have that? I think Winston Churchill called it the black dog. Did you feel you needed to have that going on to be funny? Was it a trade-off for you?
Yeah, I mean, I think I did buy into that. I think there was a part of me that felt like, man, if I'm not messed up, then I won't be able to get laughs anymore. And that is one of my biggest regrets in life, is that I bought into that one, because it's just proven really untrue. Like, nothing good started happening in my career until I got my head on straight and was able to really focus and do all that. So I really do regret that I bought into that sad clown myth. And I think I also look back and think, like, there's, you know, doing comedy, getting a crowd's laugh, getting that instant reward. Like, there was a real adrenaline rush in there. And I think that was giving me some dopamine spikes, looking back on it. Like, I think the chasing the ego and chasing the adrenaline was, you know, sending it more towards the manic side than the depressed side. And the manic side is more fun. So I think comedy was also kind of like a drug in a way, but not one that was realistically going to help long term.
But it sort of anesthetized part of what was going on.
I think so. And I think it fueled the adrenaline. And to be a 20, 21-year-old kid who's, you know, going to a state school in New Jersey and is depressed, and then you get to come up to New York, go on stage, get big laughs. Something was kicking in there that was stroking the ego, that was, you know. But the problem is that becomes a thing you need to chase. And then what happens the day you bomb and have a bad show? And you don't get that, then you bottom out even harder, you know?
But still, it seems like a delicate balancing act to be talking about such sensitive subjects like suicide in a humorous way.
Oh, for sure. And I felt a lot of responsibility with that. You know, there wasn't a point in my life where I sat down and said, I want to write a comedy show about suicide. Really, it was. I'm very good friends with a comic named Mike Birbiglia, and he's done a number of shows. One was called Sleepwalk with Me, where he talked a lot about his sleepwalking issues, and it was a long show with a narrative. And he's, in my mind, he's really set the bar with this type of show. And he said to me, he's like, you know, he asked me, like, what's the most serious it ever got, and I told him the story from the clip you played of the car crash, and he was like, man, that is hilarious, tell that on stage. And I was like, no way, like, there's loved ones of mine that don't even know that story. And he said to me, like, you know, you have this story to tell, you're a funny guy, if you can make that funny, you have something really special on your hands, might help people. So came about very organically. And I always felt that responsibility too of, you know, I did this show off Broadway for 3 months, and people would come up to me and say, you know, I lost my child to suicide, or my brother's in a mental hospital. And that was always hugely impactful to me and made me realize, like, I needed to work hard every night, never phone it in, no cheap jokes, anything that, even if it got a laugh, if it felt like it wasn't total, if it didn't have total integrity, get it out of there. Because if I'm going to be the one who says I'll go on stage and make jokes about this stuff, then I also have to be the one who handles it as responsibly as possible. And that is a very different feeling than any other comedic project I've taken on. Like, usually if you get a laugh, great, mission accomplished. This had a whole bunch of layers as far as how to protect the audience, how to protect my own feelings that I've never had to deal with before. And it was really head spinning.
That's comedian Chris Gethard here on the record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast. He hosts the podcast Beautiful Stories from Anonymous People and the Chris Gethard Show on True TV. In the context that you were just talking about, what are your thoughts, if any, about the Netflix series 13 Reasons Why? Excuse me. I mean, it's a drama, not a comedy. It tells the story of a teenage girl's suicide and who she blames for it. It's gotten a lot of pushback from people who feel the series doesn't point out alternatives.
It has. I will be totally honest and say it came out right around the same time as my special, and I'm not trying to be facetious, but I haven't watched it yet because I think it's fair to say I was kind of suicided out at that point. Like, I think there was doing the show off Broadway 8 times a week, it didn't get easier. I thought it would get easier, but it never became totally comfortable to talk about this in front of a crowd. And I haven't actually sat down and watched it yet because I think it will be a little too hard for me right now. But I have seen in the feedback to my show, I have seen a lot of people saying that they kind of came out around the same time and they're a little bit of a yin and yang. And I've had some people reach out to me and say, you know, thanks for being honest without romanticizing it and maybe implying that that show had. But I'm going to give it a few months before I catch up on the other depression-driven projects right now.
Got it. Let's talk about the Chris Gethard Show. It enters its third season this fall on True TV, and one of its taglines is the most bizarre and often saddest talk show in New York City. Describe the show.
Well, it's a very weird show. A lot of it is, I at the end of the day, I think if I had to describe it in one sentence, I'd say it's a talk show where the host is visibly not in control of what's going on. Like, it gets pretty wild. We do a lot of stunt-driven stuff and experimental stuff. And it, for me, I grew up really obsessed with late-night TV. Letterman was like a god in my mind. And I do miss the days when late night was a little more chaotic, where Letterman would do, he'd just go work for a day at the Taco Bell drive-thru or send a camera into the deli across the street. And Conan O'Brien, another hero of mine, who I've been lucky enough to meet, his remotes go out in the streets and cause some trouble. And I think late nights become maybe a little more sanitized, a little more controlled. And I've been on the late night shows a few times, and it's this weird thing where they'll call you the day before and ask you questions, and then you go in the next day, and then the producer says, here's the answers we like, just say these back, and it's pretty much scripted, and I just missed the chaos. And with my show, I was sort of like, if they're not going to do any of the chaos anymore, I want to do a show that's just all chaos, that's just all experimental, all outside the box. So it's not formatted, it's different every time. It's live, so we can take calls, and celebrities are kind of put on the spot to, step up to the plate and deliver in a live setting. And it's a tightrope act, but it's really very near and dear to my heart. And it's like a strange show with a lot of heart that I'm extremely proud to be a part of.
And something that some people might not notice exactly, although you just referred to it, your show involves a lot of people, a live audience, viewers who call in, celebrity guests, a host of recurring guests such as the human fish. It seems like one of the goals of the show is to be very inclusive.
Big time, yeah. Which I think it's funny because it's like Career Suicide was an off-Broadway show that went to HBO, and that's a very, rigid, scripted thing. And sometimes people say to me, like, how is it that you do that? And then you turn around and do this show that has like a shirtless man called the Human Fish and people doing all these crazy stunts and how do those both come out of your brain? And I think at the end of the day, with all of my work, it's mostly just like a desperate effort to connect with somebody. And that might come in the form of a one-man show. It might come in the form of saying, who are the other people out here that like this type of absurdity and can we connect with them too? And it's a very strange thing. I want it to be inclusive. I always felt kind of like I was on the island of misfit toys, so I'm building a TV show that I think, when other people are having those buttons pushed in their lives, it feels like a pretty safe space to come hang out and mess around and be a part of things. And I just like it. I just like the idea of having a community, and not you know, it's already named the Chris Gethard Show. Clearly, I have an ego, but that being said, I like the idea of making it with the actual viewer in mind. How can I make it for them? Even when we have celebrities on, I always think of it as I'm a lot more like the person watching at home than I am the celebrity. Like, my life is not glamorous. They have to come into our world and not vice versa. Like, some of my favorite moments from my show are when people call in and directly interact with celebrities and it's clearly unregulated. And you get to see, oh, there's a 16-year-old kid from Kansas who gets to call up tonight and ask Diddy for relationship advice. Like, I think that that's a nice service to provide for the audience and reminds them, this is not about Diddy. This is about you. And this is about me being able to bring you two to the table together so you can ask one of hip-hop's greatest moguls if you should break up with your boyfriend or not.
We have to take a quick break on the record. I'm Sheila Cast. When we come back...
Hello.
Hi, this is Chris Gethard.
Hi, Chris. This is me. How are you?
Well done. You caught yourself there.
I did catch myself. I was nearly about to reveal... or I was going to break my anonymity, but I didn't do it. So.
That's good. That would have been a quick call.
It would have been maybe a record for the show.
We'll ask Chris Gethard about his podcast, Beautiful Stories from Anonymous People. I'm Sheila Cass. Stay with us.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. We're speaking with comedian Chris Gethard. You may have seen him in the series Broad City or the film Don't Think Twice. He's the host of The Chris Gethard Show on True TV, and his one-man show Career Suicide is available on HBO. He'll be in Baltimore this Sunday for a stand-up show and a taping of his podcast, Beautiful Stories from Anonymous People. So the way the podcast works is that you take a phone call, and the premise is that the caller won't identify themselves and you won't hang up on them. Chris, what happens during these phone calls?
Really anything happens, and even I am often shocked at what happens. Some of them are really light and funny, and some of them get really grim and serious, and some of them are admittedly kind of boring, but it's really all about like a slice of life, you know? Just the phone rings, I pick it up. Someone has a platform to say what they want to say, and then an hour later, it's done, and it goes in any different direction. There's no, we don't produce it in any way beyond just making sure the phone connection's good, and then we see what happens.
Let's take a listen to a clip from an episode called Queer Black Punk in Appalachia.
My senior year of high school, there was a rally on this, you know, our courthouse is just like this tiny little rinky-dink courthouse, and there was a KKK rally, and... I think it was, yeah, you know, that was like, I grew up fishing. I grew up, you know, riding dirt bikes. I grew up in the country, and it was in lots of ways wonderful. And then, you know, in all these other ways, it was traumatic.
Struggle with homelessness, divorce, escaping from a religious cult. These calls can be very heavy. Afterward, do you wonder what happened to the people who called?
I do. I very often wonder what happened to them, but I'll never know. It's such is the premise of the project. But and you know, I sometimes wonder, like, I'm dredging all this stuff up with no way to process it for myself or them or the listener. But at the end of the day, I like to remind myself, like, I am giving a platform to some people who maybe don't feel like they have one, and that's, I think, a good thing. And the, even the call you just played the clip from, she was from Pennsylvania, and I always think of Pennsylvania as right next door to New Jersey, and to hear that she was dealing with Klan rallies in her hometown, it's such a wake-up call to remember, oh, everybody has a life, and they're living it, and people are in the middle of their struggles, and then they go away, and I'm just left wondering forever how they're doing.
Some folks might be skeptical that these conversations on your show would be as captivating as ones with people who are famous, who are prepared to be entertaining, who have kind of polished what they have to say.
Yeah, and I get that. I've just never thought that way. I think since I've been a kid, reality has always just struck me as a little funnier than fiction. Like even the comedy I always loved, like anytime I watched SNL when I was a kid and people would break, you'd hear stories about Lorne Michaels getting mad at it. And I remember being 8, 9 years old and going, why? That's real life. That's funny. That's the best part to me is the real part. So I don't know. I think there's enough podcasts out there that where celebrities talk to other, you know, celebrities. And I'm a fan of many of those shows. I'm not trying to throw shade at them in any way. But the idea that I'll be on the subway and you know, you sometimes look at someone's face and you realize, oh, they're thinking really hard about something and I wonder what it is. And that to me is a fascinating thought. And I just really like regular people. I really like people living regular lives, going through struggles that, you know, are like anyone else's. And I want to hear about those. I don't need to hear from celebrities. It's not as interesting as real life.
What would you say you have learned from speaking to all these people?
I think I've learned a few things. You know, I think the big two that come to mind is one, just on a personal level, is that like the one thing that every caller has in common seems to be that they feel like nobody wants to slow down and listen to them. And that's kind of a sad thing, to be the omnipresent feeling, you know, to get calls from people who are of all different ages, all different backgrounds, all different races, all different sexual preferences. And the one common thing seems to be, hey, nobody wants to hear this. Thanks for making this podcast where I can just get this off my chest. That's a little distressing. And it makes me realize, like, I can slow down and take a beat and deal with other human beings a little more than I do on a day-to-day basis. And that's probably a pretty healthy thing for myself.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast, speaking with comedian Chris Gethard, host of The Chris Gethard Show on True TV. He'll be in Baltimore this weekend to tape his podcast, Beautiful Stories from Anonymous People. So have these calls changed how you react to what people tell you?
It definitely has changed how I react to people in my day-to-day life. Even if it's just on the level that if someone else seems like they're in a bad mood or a quiet place, I judge a little less. The show is a very much a reminder that we all kind of live in our own heads. We all kind of come from places where things are happening that we're processing and struggling through, and you never know what those things are for the person next to you, and you have to give people benefit of the doubt. I think that empathy has become a much bigger factor in my life than it was before I did the show.
How do you think what you do fits into the political mood of the country?
It's tough, and it's something that I've had to struggle with because I've never been a political comedian. My work's always been a little personal and a little more absurd, but then you do feel this responsibility of, if I have a platform, shouldn't I be using it towards something when there's so much tension right now? But also, I don't necessarily want to feel like my arm is twisted into changing the style of my work. But what I have made a conscious effort to do is we with the podcast, since it has become a pretty large platform, what we did do is we started a voicemail line where every once in a while, we've only used it probably 4 or 5 times, we told people, hey, leave a voicemail, and if there's any stories out there that we feel like that, you know, that every time I tweet out the number, over 5,000 people try to call. So we can't really control what we get. It's really crazy. It's like playing the lottery. So, you know, things come in and there's certain stories where it shouldn't take a 1 in 5,000 chance for them to be able to tell their story. So the voicemail line, the clip of the queer black girl from Appalachia was a voicemail line because I felt like, well, that's a story that I want to hear right now, especially when the region of the country she's in is one that was sort of the decisive battleground in the presidential election. I'd love to hear from someone who grew up there and who grew up there as an outsider. We had a call from a police officer who really disagreed with the whole, like, sort of, you know, blue code of silence. The Police Lives Matter was more of a supporter of Black Lives Matter. I just thought that was an interesting perspective. So it's given me the ability to find some people whose voices maybe need to be heard. We had a trans caller who just really talked about their experience. And to be able to put it on my show where I know some people aren't listening in the most diverse areas. Some people aren't living in a place where they're interacting with other human beings who fit these molds. These people are sort of theoretical in their mind. They read about them in the news. They read other people's opinions and they filter them through other people's opinions. And I do feel like I've made an effort with my podcast in a political sense of I'm going to put people's first-person accounts of their lives on record. And I think sometimes, you know, that's about the best I can do with my style of comedy with what this show is. But I think there's a lot of listeners to the show who maybe never heard a trans person describe their own experience in their own words. Now they have. They haven't met a trans person, but they've heard an hour-long discussion of what that's like. As a Northeastern liberal, which I never hide on the show, I'm never trying to like hide that or trick anybody, I do try to make sure that there's voices that are maybe theoretical to people that become actualized.
It's been great talking to you. Thank you.
Thanks so much. This was a very, it's nice to not be asked the same six questions that I get asked in a lot of these things. Thank you so much for having me.
High praise. Thank you for that. Comedian Chris Gethard is performing at the Autobar on Sunday. His early show will be the taping of the Beautiful Anonymous podcast, and the later show will be stand-up. We'll link to times and ticket information at the On the Record page at WYPR.org, as well as some web extras from this interview. I'm Sheila Cass. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.